You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Today we have for you two segments about animals. First, we're going to hear about an extraordinary program helping people on the streets of Santa Fe. And then we'll be talking to the author of a fun new book about dogs and cats and their people. Stay with us. The Radio Cafe is brought to you by the Santa Fe Institute, a world-renowned research hub offering free online courses in the science of complex systems. Check out their community lecture series and summer science festival in Santa Fe. More at santafe.edu. I'm so happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Karen Kane. She's executive director of the Street Homeless Animal Project, which has been serving Santa Fe's homeless community for many years. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you.
So what is the Street Homeless Animal Project? What do you guys do?
So what we do is, for 21 years, we work with homeless folks out on the street that have companion animals.
Mostly dogs?
Mostly dogs. Some cats. We had a few tarantulas at one point. We've had a few snakes, but primarily, yes, dogs and a few cats.
Probably anybody listening right now has walked downtown and seen various people, homeless people, who have their animals, have their dogs. What is the role of a dog in a homeless person's life?
Well, it's huge. For many folks, and I know for myself, I can't imagine not having my companion animals, four dogs and a cat. For emotional purposes, companionship, it's vital. They're amazing beings, and it's vital to our psyche, to our well-being.
As we're sitting here, my little dog is on my right leg.
Beautiful.
But many of us who are pet owners can relate to the role that pets play in our lives, but it's another sort of order of magnitude if you're on the street.
It absolutely is. What we do is, anyone 24/7 out on the street who has a companion animal, we provide veterinary services on cold nights, a motel room, anything and everything that your companion animal would need. And absolutely, I think it's even more urgent because for many of these folks, these companion animals, they are absolutely their family and they are all they have. No one wants to be out on the streets. There are circumstances why this occurs. And we know mental health issues, substance issues, domestic violence issues, and this, their family being with them, it's amazing, reduces usage of substances.
If you have a dog?
Absolutely, absolutely. And statistically in studies, we know that. And it's a reason to get up. We all have to have a purpose and a reason to get up in the morning. And so when you have another being that you have to be responsible for and to take care of, it's just huge for numerous reasons.
So there are people who can be judgmental of that and say, you know, here you are begging for money and you're giving it to an animal and so on. But the other side of it also is, I mean, do these animals play a role in keeping these folks safe?
Absolutely. A lot of folks out on the street have larger breed dogs. There are a lot of pits out there. And again, I think that's secondary. I think, again, the reason being and having a companion animal is because that companion animal is their family. But I think also there are other reasons, and I guess safety would be one. Someone to bunk down with at night.
And literally keep you warm, I would think.
And literally can keep you warm. That's right.
How did this project start?
I've always been involved in animal rights and animal welfare. And when I got to Santa Fe in 98, I was driving down St. Francis, and I saw an old man and an old dog. And I pulled over, and I asked if they needed help. And he said, my dog needs a doc, and so do I. So I took him to health care for the homeless, and the dog went to the clinic. And that's when the program was born.
So what happened next?
Gosh, it was checking with veterinary clinics. It was very ad hoc in the beginning, trying to get financial support. My mom was a huge supporter of the program in the beginning. and trying to raise some funds. And that's not easy.
No, I mean, people understand the animal shelter, but this is animals and it's homelessness. And a lot of what you need is, for example, I mean, dogs that are on the street with their people, like any dogs, like any animals, are going to have illnesses, they're going to get older, they're going to have accidents, and they're more exposed, and the people have less ability to pay for any of that kind of care. So I would imagine that some healthcare needs get put off for those animals. So it's a lot of vet bills.
It's a lot of vet bills. That is our biggest expense. And as we know, again, I have four dogs and a cat, and the biggest expense is veterinary care, and it is very, very expensive. So you can imagine being out on the street with no resources and some incident occurs, you know, hit by a car or illness. I try to impress upon people that, again, these are their family members. And for many of these folks, it's what keeps them going and saves their lives on a day-to-day basis. We're ethically and morally, I feel, obliged to help one another out, because we don't think that it could be you or I. But I know for a fact that it can be you or I, a chain of events or circumstances, and one could be out on the street. So the goal of the program and the mission of the program is to keep families together, human and non-human animal families together.
One of the stories you told is about a man who was a professional, the son of professionals.
That's right.
Middle-class, educated person who had an injury and one thing led to another, and he lost everything.
That's right. And that could be any one of us. A chain of events or some circumstance or situation occurs, and we don't like to think about that, and we don't want to think about that. But at the end of the day, these folks are out on the street with their family members, their companion animals. And again, they need precisely what we need. And you bring up a very good point, being out there in the cold or the heat, exposed, not knowing where your next meal is going to come from. And for a lot of these folks out on the street, their companion animal comes first. They eat before that person.
There are some programs for homeless folks here in Santa Fe. What happens? Do you kind of step away once the person gets into housing?
So what we've done is we felt like that folks fought so hard to keep their companion animal that the program will help for 6 months after with veterinary care, food, whatever they need. And then my feeling is that they're hooked up with other agencies in town, and whether it be Guidance Center, LifeLink, Youth Shelters, Youth Works. And at that point, then, that's what we do after they get into housing, which we hope everyone does, will help for a period of 6 months.
So how do you find people, or how do they find you?
Well, I think, you know, we've been doing this for 21 years. And I think originally, my being a mental health therapist and having worked with the homeless population and at shelters, so I think that that was an easy avenue there because I was right there. And I think over the years, it's been word of mouth. And I've said to you previously and others, our issue is the general populace, that they don't know who we are or what we do. And that's what we need to get out there, is who we are and what we do, because then we can get donations and help from the public at large. But as far as the homeless community, the Grapevine and shelter and other agencies, they know about us. And so the word has been spread, I think, really kind of near and far, actually, what we do and who we are. So that's the easy part. The harder part is raising funds and the general public. And folks, as you mentioned earlier, every day that we go out, we see someone on the corner flying a sign, spanging, with a companion animal. So it's not invisible. We and they, we're out there.
What kind of relationships have you built with your homeless clients and their animals? I mean, you're a psychotherapist. You've always been very much about working with humans.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that has made it much easier to do, run, and have this program because there's that rapport. The other is we have impeccable trust out on the street. And I love these people. And I care about what happens to them. And obviously we know I love their non-human family members. And they should be together. And I think you mentioned something about judgment and whatnot. The reality is that who am I to judge, number one. The other reality is that we don't live in a perfect world. And so there is domestic violence, and there are substance abuse, and there are mental health issues. And I know a lot about that. And so these folks out on the street with these animals, again, we have a moral and an ethical obligation to help one another out. We just simply do. The rapport with folks out there, I learn so much. We're all the same. We just have different circumstances. And I think sometimes I tell people, you know, sit on the curb at Allsup's, or if you see somebody, just walk over and say, how you doing?
A lot of people are scared to do that.
And I get that. And the world that we live in, and I think now more than ever, and this situation that we have out there, the divisiveness, and it's more dire, funding is being cut, and it's a horrific time, actually. And so we're seeing more people out on the streets with substance issues, mental health, and other issues. And so we have to fight even harder. And I get that with people being fearful. But I think, like anyone, wherever it is, when we get to know someone or we know someone, the differences melt away. And it's far harder to dislike or hate someone that you've looked in the eye and that you've had a few words with. So I encourage folks, you know, clearly you have to feel comfortable, but, you know, just to say, how's your day? How are you? And that goes a long way.
Yeah. And what if they say, terrible? So then the question is, what is our role as people maybe who are somewhat better or a lot better off?
I think that it's not necessarily about that we can fix something, because we all want to fix things. I think the most important aspect of it is that you're taking the time and you're just simply willing to listen. I can't fix everyone or everything. None of us can. But it's just taking that moment or two to say, you're a human being and you're important and you belong and I care.
Tell us some of the stories of the people who you've worked with.
Oh my gosh. I remember a fellow, Brian, was an older fellow, serious alcoholic issues, which obviously is not uncommon. And he had this dog that was not a street dog, more of a poodle-ish kind of dog, came into town, had some history here in Santa Fe, dog needed help, and we helped. And then I didn't see Brian for a while, and I asked around about Brian. He had left, which is not uncommon. People are here, and then they're not. But what we do is we help, and then we just have to, a wing and a prayer, release. And so I'd gotten a call from South Carolina or North Carolina medical examiner's office, and Brian was traveling to South or North Carolina, I think to be with family, and he was in a camp. Some folks like to be alone, and others congregate together. And people heard barking and barking and barking. And what had happened is Brian had had an aneurysm. And so his pup was tied to his pack.
And he died from the aneurysm.
And he died from the aneurysm. And other folks came over, and authorities obviously were called. But what happened with it is we got a call because of the dog having been treated here and at Smith Clinic, who is amazing, and our clinic for years and years. We get a discount from them. They're incredible. Lots of docs on duty. And they got a call and called me. They had the dog at the animal shelter. And through all of these connections, family was able to be contacted. through the rabies tag and other services provided, the connection here in Santa Fe. So the tiny town, they celebrated the dog, and the dog was adopted by this incredible family. His family was able to be contacted, and he was able, at the end of the day, where he was trying to get to, he got home to his family.
And was given a presumably a memorial.
That's right. And there is story after story like this of these bonds between these human and non-human animals. The goal for me and for this program is we're totally grassroots, teeny tiny. We run on about $100,000, $115,000 a year. We do case management, and we want to continue to do this. We're the only in northern New Mexico, and maybe the state, to do what we do. We have to keep this going for these human and non-humans out there on the street, because if they had no one to call, I cannot even fathom the level of suffering that would occur, that your family member, in whatever shape, is in, and that you have absolutely no one to phone to get help. I couldn't live with that. We have to care that much about one another. And I just want to say, I think really what it is we say, and I say at Street Homeless, we believe that no companion animal of a homeless person should be hungry or in pain just because their guardian doesn't have a roof over their head or money in their pockets.
If people want to find out more, they can go to the website, which is NMSHAP, NMSHAP, which stands for Street Homeless Animal Project, .org, and they can make a donation from there. They can find out more. They can read some of these stories. And you've got some wonderful veterinarians, and you've also got some success stories of people who ended up in housing and basically made it through that bad time of their lives.
Absolutely. And again, it's about keeping families together, the human and the non-human, because for many of these folks, that is all they have.
Karen Kane is Executive Director of the Street Homeless Animal Project, nmshap.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
And Mary Charlotte, I just want to say, we have a Facebook page. There's a phone number you can call us at. I'm not very astute with all of the technology and whatnot, but please get in touch with us. Please help us out. It's such a worthy endeavor.
And every single penny is well spent. And here at Christmas and holiday times, it's a nice time to think about others.
Absolutely.
Karen, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Funding learning initiatives and community programs, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanl Foundation for support of the Radio Cafe. I'd like now to welcome Carlene Montes de Oca. She's author of the new book, Dog as My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you. So this is a book about basically, I mean, it's about animals, but it's really more about humans deciding to have the life that they want to live and to be healthy. And I imagine that, and you talk about this too, it's very much your story bound up in this. How did you come to write this book?
Well, I've always wanted to write. That's always been something I've wanted ever since I was a young child, but I had a lot of things getting in my way, mostly my own self-doubts and my lack of confidence. But one thing that seemed to be the thread throughout my life is that I always had animals and they always helped me. Like when I was a kid, I was really lonely. I was very lonely. My parents were very overprotective, but I had dogs and they seemed to accept me just as I was. They always comforted me when I felt alone. So I always felt like I had really good friends that helped me. And then when I got older, unfortunately, I went through a divorce and it was a really hard time for me. And at that time, I had cats. And I did a TEDx talk this year where I talked a little bit more in depth about that divorce and how the cats actually came to my rescue on a particular night. But boy, that really taught me that dogs and cats at this point could really be powerful health and wellness allies that not only affect our physical well-being, but our emotional and even our spiritual well-being. And then I had worked in the movie business for a very long time as an editor, and then I moved on to be an acupuncturist and a plant-based nutritional consultant in Northern California. And as I sat there with my clients, they would start to share with me stories about how a dog had helped them through a tough time or a cat had helped them in some way. And I thought to myself, wow, I'm not the only one. And so I started to collect all these stories. And truthfully, that's how Dog is My Doctor, Cat is My Nurse came to be. And I will add one last component, which was that I adopted this crazy six-pack of animals, 4 dogs, rescue dogs, and 2 rescue cats. And they taught me a lot about what health and wellness was all about. So it was all these steps, all these combination of factors that led to me writing this book.
What happened with your cats that helped you through this painful moment in your life?
Right. Well, one night, I was going through a divorce. And if anybody has been through that, maybe for me anyway, it felt like somebody had taken a 2x4 and slugged me in the gut. It was very, very painful. And I remember feeling extremely lonely. And I was sitting in my apartment, and this is when I was living in California. And I remember I was sitting in the dark, and I had gotten to this point where I just felt I needed help. And I had been going to a therapist, and she had been helping me a little bit. And she had said to me, you know, Carlene, you'll feel so much better if you cry. And I'm from a family who, nope, crying, be stoic, you know, have a stiffer upper lip. And I sat there and I thought to myself, I literally said out loud, help me, help me. And I don't even know who I was talking to. I was just saying it out loud. And suddenly one of my cats jumped into my lap, and this was Cody, and he's a little yellow tabby cat. And he started digging in my lap, and then he started purring. And if anybody has cats out there, they know that purring is so soothing and relaxing. And I remember I started to feel that. And then my other black and white tuxedo cat, Chester, he came over and he stood in front of me. And then suddenly he just pushed off with his back legs and his front paws landed on my shoulders. And he just looked at me, and that look, I don't even know what it was, but it was innocent and it was beautiful. And I suddenly burst out crying. I just burst out crying. And from then on, it was something shifted, something changed. And it was odd, but I started to get better. I started to feel better. I started to really, I guess, just move into a healthier place. And I felt that my cats helped me every day until I actually then met my husband now, who is a wonderful human being, and we've been married for almost 20 years.
So animals, it's not only that they help us, and there are lots of ways in which they help us physically, like you write in the book, that the sound or the feel of purring and the act of petting a dog and things like that lower your blood pressure, release, you know, happy hormones and things like that. So all of those things are true. But also, they provide such an example of how to live. One of them's barking. is he agreeing?
I think so.
Dog downstairs barking. An example on how to live, for example, forgiveness. They don't hold grudges.
Absolutely. Most people, when they think about health, they think physical health. And they forget that such a big part of our well-being really is wrapped around our emotional health, our mental health, our spiritual health. That's the whole package. And that's why it was such a revelation to me as an acupuncturist and a practitioner of Chinese medicine, where we look at whole health, whole body health, not just the physical. When I started to see all of these ways, yes, they can help us with forgiveness. They don't hold grudges. Even animals who've been abused and neglected, we see them come back and embrace their new home and the new love. And another primary way that they can help us is How many people do you know who are just rushing through life? Oh, I got to get here. I got to get there. They're never in the present moment. They're off in the past. They're thinking of the future. But living in the present, we understand living in the now is such an important thing that especially Americans seem to forget about how important that is. But that's where animals live. They're in the now. They're not focused on those other places. They're here. And I always feel that that dog, that when you're walking your dog every day, we should take their example. They are now. They're sniffing. They're happy. They're in that place. And a third place I want to say that we can take great example from our animals is gratitude. I think gratitude is one of the strongest healing practices any of us can embrace, and so few of us do. And yet our animals show us that every day.
And one thing that I think is so rewarding when you adopt a shelter animal, especially an adult animal, is that they give a kind of gratitude that sometimes puppies don't. I mean, and, you know, we've all probably had, many of us who are animal people have both adopted adult dogs and raised dogs from puppyhood, and they're both very rewarding things to do. But I remember I adopted a 14-year-old dog once. I think he was 13 or 14. My friend's grandmother had died. Nobody wanted the dog. They were going to put him down. I was like, bring him over. And that dog was so, I don't know how you can exactly know, but he was so grateful. You could just tell. Mm-hmm. He was so happy to be there, and he was so cooperative. And I had a puppy, and the puppy was like, whatever.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I had another experience with a dog named Teddy, who was this chow, but he was, it's really hysterical because the vet said, oh, this is a purebred chow. And I thought, he looks like a mop. You know, I'd never had a purebred dog, but he was totally a mop. And he was found in Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles, in a homeless area. And he had never had a home. And he was 10 when I got him. And nobody wanted to go near him because he would bite. But then when I actually took him to the vet said, that's because he's got all these abscesses and things in his mouth. He's in incredible pain. And once we had that taken care of and we gave him patience and time to be with us, suddenly a lot of people kind of have a little bit of a thing about chows. Oh my gosh, he was the friendliest, sweetest, most loyal dog. He was always kissing me. He always wanted to be with me. He wanted to play with the other dogs. So yeah, I saw his gratitude very clearly, and it reminded me that I should be more grateful for, I have so much in my life, and all of us generally do, so gratitude is an easy thing to come by.
Another thing is they really help us, I think, and you talk about this, with routines, with your morning routine, with your exercise routine, with your feeding, you know, all the things that we need to really be cognizant of in our own lives, they kind of make us do. It's almost sometimes like they're wearing wristwatches. I had a dachshund once who, if I didn't feed him by 5, he would basically come up and say, it's 5, point to his little wrist.
It's true. Routines are great for all of us, because I know if I don't have my routines, I could easily sit and watch Netflix all day or do something like that. But I think about, not only for the general public, routines are good, but also, for example, there is a quote from a psychiatrist in my book who works with children with some emotional issues. And he talks about how important it is that animals give these children routines, things they can do, brush them, feed them, walk them. And also for kids that are autistic. You know, there is a certain routine that some of them, like, for example, I talk about a little girl at a rescue, and also they did grooming there, and how she had her routines with the rescue dogs that they adopted, and she would speak to them. She wouldn't speak to anybody else, but she suddenly was speaking in long sentences to them. And for older people who, gosh, you know, when you get to be a certain age, oftentimes you don't have a lot of friends because people have passed. You know, you don't have the same circle that you have anymore. But if you have your routines, you know, you eat with your dog, you spend time with your cat, you're playing. You know, I always recommend that people that walk their dogs, but they can do yoga with their cats or stretch. And that's so good for us. But when we have our routines this way, it can be so beneficial, especially it keeps us from thinking all those crazy thoughts we may have, or, you know, slipping into things if we have a tendency to think in a more pessimistic way.
The thing you mentioned about autism, I think, is important because, as we probably many of us know from Temple Grandin, who had such a severe, I don't even know how you call autism, because there's so many advantages to it in terms of high intelligence level and focus and things like that, but also disadvantages in terms of social skills. But she was unable to relate to people, but totally able to relate to cows. Mm-hmm. And we underestimate or don't necessarily think about the importance of animals in the lives of kids who are autistic.
Mm-hmm. And you're bringing up a good point. She was talking about cows. Now, I talk about dogs and cats in this book. I started off the book thinking I would incorporate every animal because I could see the benefit that they all have, but then that would have been a huge, you know, tome. And I wanted
volumes 2, 3, and 4. Yes.
Yeah, I would keep going. But that is the thing. I think about how there's pigs and cows and all sorts of animals. It's really making that connection. And people feel the connection. As long as they're making the connection, they could have a lot of the benefits. They could experience these benefits.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the background, you hear my puppy on his squeaky toy. I think that they are providing sound effects because they know that you're here, having written a book about dogs.
Yes, and they're good critics. They're they're giving it a 5.
Yes, they're literary critics.
Yes.
So the book is full of really lovely stories that you collected over the years. Tell us the process of putting together those stories and maybe a few of your favorite stories from others.
Well, it was an interesting process because I wasn't sure how to collect stories. So I began with some of my clients in my practice because they had shared stories already.
Acupuncture,
yes. And then I started putting it out more to the community. And then I started to notice that whenever I was traveling or going somewhere and somebody would ask what I did for a living and I started to share about the book, they would tell me, they'd say, oh my gosh, here's my story. And they'd share a story. And it was cute because at the end they'd finish and they'd almost look around and they'd say to me, oh my gosh, but you must think I'm crazy telling you this. And I said, no, this is the perfect story. So, you know, it's interesting because the first story I would like to share is not in my book, but it was in my TEDx talk. And it just only because I didn't hear it in time to put it in my book, but it does demonstrate the power that, in this case, a dog can have with this relationship with this woman. And she, this is a story about Roxanne, and she had a dog named Kayla. And Kayla would often work under Roxanne's desk as, you know, as Roxanne was working on her computer. And one day, what happened was that she heard Kayla starting to whine. And when it didn't stop, she took her to the vet, and the vet said, there's nothing wrong with your dog. And Kayla kept whining, and she whined, and she whined. And one night, Roxanne wanted her husband to get some shut-eye, so she started petting Kayla just to try to keep her quiet. And then she reached for her breast, and when she touched her own breast, Kayla, who was 12 years old, she had arthritis. She hadn't jumped on the bed in 2 years. She leaped up there, and she started scratching at Roxanne's breast, and it made it bleed. And then her husband, Dave, woke up, and he looked, and he touched her breast, and he found a lump. And it was just really the size of a pencil eraser. So Roxanne went to the doctor, and they did. She had already been to the doctor a month before, and he'd given her a clean bill of health. And in this case, they found an aggressive form of breast cancer that had grown really fast. And he said, you know what? Your dog just saved your life. So,
and she's still with us.
And she's still with us, absolutely. So I was always amazed, but there were other stories in my book. Like, for example, I think about, for those cat lovers out there who I hope there's many, but there was a story about a woman named Michelle and her husband. And her husband came down with Parkinson's disease. And they had two cats, two rescue cats. Michelle and her husband his name was Mike, would love to walk together all the time, but he couldn't anymore. He, you know, with Parkinson's disease, you go into this state where, you know, he was somewhat immobile. And all of a sudden, one day, Michelle was taking a hike, and this is up in Northern California, and her cat got out, and she noticed her cat started following her, and she accompanied her on her walk. And the next day, the cat did the same thing. And she kept doing it, and she kept staying with her. And so what she started to notice was she had a walking partner. And if she did not talk about routines, if she did not get out there at 10 a.m., the cat would go on the counter and start, like, bashing things around. And one day, she said she still didn't leave, and the cat grabbed her necklace off the counter and started running off with it. So Michelle makes sure, and she said it's incredible what these dogs do for her and her husband. For her husband, they make him laugh. Sometimes their warmth feels good, but they also sense when he just doesn't want to be touched, because sometimes you don't want to with Parkinson's disease. And she feels she would have gone insane if it wasn't for these cats helping her with her loneliness or sadness. She says it's very trying to be a caretaker, but the cats are the ones that kind of provide this amazing spirit in the house. So these are two stories of a dog and a cat who have helped their guardians be healthier, happier, and more extraordinary.
And there are so many stories, of course, especially with dogs, of dogs rescuing people. And you mentioned the cancer story, and there are, Assistance Dogs of the West trains dogs to detect all kinds of diseases, including diabetes and seizures and so on. But I think a lot of the important contribution that dogs make to our lives is really in the everyday. I mean, I think of it personally, and I always have dogs, and I just had a dog die last Saturday, but, he lived a very long life, and there's two more who are chewing things in the background of this very conversation that we're having. But I think of it as the four priorities: food, love, other dogs, and walking. And, if you think about that, that's pretty grounded, good priorities that we can all, follow.
Absolutely. I think that they're all really important. They can teach us so much. It's funny, though. One of my dogs didn't necessarily enjoy other dogs, but still there was a lesson there. Because I used to get upset, people would leave their dogs off leash, and then the dog would run up, and my dog was not quite ready, and he'd get really nervous. And at one point, I decided, you know what? The only one stressed out totally is me. So I decided that I had to work on myself. And that is something that I worked on. I don't know if you remember the part in my book where I met Cesar Millan, yeah, the dog whisperer.
Yeah.
I had a dog named Roxy who was so tough. I mean, she had so many issues. But he taught me, he said, if you're ever going to help her with what she has, you have to take care of your own way of being in the world. You have to let go of your stress, your tension, your whatever discomforts you may be feeling, because the dog will feel that. The dog will feel that. So that's when I determined that dogs feel our energy going down that leash, and the best way that we can help them is to take care of ourselves. And what better gift can a dog or a cat give you than for you to take the best care of yourself that you can?
Now, not everybody takes good care of their dogs, and there is a case here in New Mexico of a dog hoarder being exposed that you've been following. How are those dogs doing? Are they in need right now?
Absolutely in need. Absolutely in need. I was actually part of a group of volunteers that went out and helped transport the dogs out of that hoarding situation. It was a terrible situation. It broke all our hearts to see these 24 dogs, I think, we took out of there. But at least we felt that we were taking them to a temporary situation where they would be better. Now, right now, there are 18 dogs at the Light in the Desert Sanctuary, and they are in urgent need of fosters. They are in urgent need of adoption. There are two people who are caring for these animals, and they have full-time jobs. And she has told me, this is not sustainable. We very, very much need the community to step forward and help us. So I know two people personally who have adopted two of the dogs, three people actually, and the dogs are shy, but boy, you have to give shy dogs time, but then they can be extraordinary companions. So I'm really urging people to step forward and help these dogs because, animals, dogs are our best friends. They always say that. So we need to be their best friends too.
LightInTheDesertSanctuary.org. Ladies and gentlemen, everything we've been talking about, if you want a dog to help your life and whose life that you can help a lot, there's your opportunity.
This is your opportunity. And if you can't personally do it, then please ask your friends and family, because none of us, these dogs have suffered enough, and we don't want to see them suffer anymore.
Carlene Montes de Oca is author of the book Dog as My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse, and this book can be found in local Santa Fe bookstores.
Yes. In fact, I know Opposite Bookstore in the DeVargas Mall has a few copies, as well as my follow-up book, which is called Pause for the Good Stuff, and that is spelled P-A-W-S, Pause for the Good Stuff, and online, of course.
Excellent. Carlene, thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.